There was only one respect in which the times and circumstances were not propitious. The Delta of Egypt had been the breadbasket of the Mediterranean since the time of Julius Caesar and Jesus Christ. For the first time in 100 years, the abundant fertility of its black alluvial soils had failed. The production of wheat and durra had fallen short of the needs of the civilian population, let alone those of a great expeditionary army. "We are short of at least 5,000 tons of the flour needed for the primary stage of the campaign," the quartermaster general told the Sirdar. "After the first 3 months, we will require an additional 1,500 tons per month for the duration of hostilities." Kitchener frowned. Bread, the staple of any modern army, made from wholesome clean grain and not too much hard biscuit, ensured the health of the troops. Now they were telling him that he did not have it. "Come back tomorrow," he told his quartermaster. He went immediately to see Sir Evelyn Baring at the British Agency. It would have been political suicide for anybody to call it Government House, but that was what it was. Baring had championed Kitchener's appointment to Commander-in-Chief above the claims of better-qualified men. Although they were not friends, they thought alike. Baring listened and then said, "I think I know the man who can get your bread for you. He provisioned Gordon in Khartoum during the siege. Most fortuitously, he is in Cairo at this very moment." Within 2 hours, a mystified Ryder Courtney found himself under Kitchener's reptilian stare. "Can you do it?" Kitchener asked. Ryder's business instincts clicked into place. "Yes, I can. However, I will need 4% commission for myself, General." "That is known as profiteering, Mr. Courtney. I can offer you 2.5%." "That is known as highway robbery, General," Ryder replied. Kitchener blinked. He was unaccustomed to being addressed in that fashion. Ryder went on smoothly. "However, in the name of patriotism, I will accept your offer, on the condition that the army provides a suitable home in Cairo for me and my family, in addition to a stipend of £200 a month to cover my immediate expenses." Ryder rode back to Penrod's riverside home, where he and Saffron had been guests since their arrival in Cairo. He was in jubilant mood. Saffron had been agitating. Rather than return to Abyssinia, she wanted to remain in this civilized, salubrious city, where she could be close to Amber. When Saffron agitated, it was much like the living on the slopes of an active volcano. Now her power to persuade was even more formidable than usual, as she was pregnant again. Ryder had seen no good commercial sense in setting up business in Egypt, but Herbert Kitchener had just changed that. He left his horse with the groom in the stables and went down to the lawns above the river bank. Jane Ballantyne, Amber, and Saffron were taking tea in the summer-house. They were rereading and animatedly discussing the letter from Sebastian Hardy which had arrived on the mail ship from England and had been delivered to Amber's suite at Shepherd's Hotel that morning. Mr. Hardy took great pleasure in informing Miss Amber Benbrook of the recent resuscitation of public interest in her book Slaves of the Mahdi, owing to the prospect of war against the evil Dervish Empire in Omdurman. The amounts paid by Macmillan Publishers in respect of royalties earned over the past 3 months amounted to £56,483.10 and 6. In addition, Mr. Hardy begged to inform her, and the other beneficiaries, that the investments he had made on behalf of the Benbrook Family Trust had been most favourably affected by the same considerations as the book. He had placed large sums in the common stock of the Vickers Company, which had purchased Mr. Maxim's patent in his machine gun. This investment had almost doubled in value. The value of assets of the trust now amounted to a little over £300,000. In addition, Macmillan were eager to publish Amber's new manuscript, provisionally entitled African Dreams and Nightmares. Ryder strode down the lawns, but the twins were so excited by Mr. Hardy's good tidings that they were oblivious to his presence until his shadow fell over the tea table. They looked up. "What is all this laughter and hijinks?" he demanded. "You know I cannot bear to see anybody having so much fun." Saffron jumped to her feet, a little ungainly under her maternal burden, and stood on tiptoe to embrace him. "You will never guess what," she whispered in his ear. "You are married to a rich woman." "Indeed, I am married to a rich woman who resides permanently in Cairo in a house paid for by General Kitchener and the Egyptian army." She leant back, holding him at arm's length, and stared at him in astonishment and delight. "If this is another of your atrocious jokes, Ryder Courtney, I'll..." She searched for a suitable threat. I'll throw you into the Nile." He grinned complacently. "Too early for a swim. Besides, you and I cannot waste precious time. We have to go hunting for our new home." He would tell her later that he must leave within days for the United States and Canada to negotiate for the purchase of 20,000 tons of wheat. It was not the ideal time to break such news to a pregnant wife. "At least she will have enough to keep her fully occupied in my absence." He had learnt by hard experience that when she was bored, Saffron was more difficult to handle than the entire Dervish army.